Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, horror. Later on, we hear Inner Sanctum with the story The Undead. But right now, the famous work from Charlotte Perkins Gilman, her story The Yellow Wallpaper, adapted on suspense. The story was first published in 1892 and to this day is widely regarded as one of the best in the horror genre. And one of the best actresses of radio's yesteryear, Agnes Moorehead, will play the lead in the CBS broadcast from July 29, 1948.
Suspense. Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills, starring tonight, Miss Agnes Moorehead, in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I've never seen a worse wallpaper in my life. All those strangled heads and bulbous eyes and fungus growths seem to shriek with derision. When we came to this house, the minute I saw it, I made up my mind secretly to start writing again in spite of them. But I don't dare let John know I'm keeping this journal. It's difficult being married to a doctor. John's an excellent doctor, I'm sure, but he's so inconsistent about me. He says I'm not really sick, that I'm only a little run down from caring for the baby, that I have a temporary nervous depression. Yet he prescribes phosphates or phosphites, I don't know which, and tonics and exercise. And he absolutely forbids me to work until I'm well again. He hates for me to write a word. But writing is such a relief to my mind. I can write down things, tell things here that... No, John says I'm not to brood about those things. I confess they make me feel bad, so I'll only write about the house. I saw it for the first time today. It's the most beautiful place. John rented it for the summer, and we drove up today, a perfect June morning. The bay and the white sails and people already in swimming, and then the shaded lane and the riotous old-fashioned flowers and the gnarly trees and the house. The house standing alone in the summer stillness. I could never tell, John, but you know, the house spoke to me. It was only because he rattled on so that I couldn't hear what
Reminded me of those English places you read about. Gardeners, cottages, and everything, and had only 200 a month.
Hedges and walls and gates that lock, and there's a ghostliness.
Remember, I rented it just for you, darling. And you're going to let Jenny do all the work while you live like a prince. You like it, darling? Speak up.
Yes, John. Yes, it's lovely, but it's strange, as though it... might be haunted.
Darling, you've got that look on your face again. That dopey look. Well, Gina's home, has a station wagon. And if I know my dear sister, she's already turned the place inside out and cleaned it top to bottom.
John, is it haunted, do you think?
What, the house?
Uh-huh.
At 200 a month? Well, that's asking too much of Faith. Come on, hop up.
You always laugh at anything you can't touch or see or put down in figures. There is something strange about the house, I feel.
If you weren't always imagining...
I'm not imagining. One reason I don't get well is that you don't believe me. You don't even believe I'm sick. You tell my friends and relatives. I've heard you. I've heard you that there's nothing wrong with
there me. There is nothing wrong
with you. You see, you're saying it again.
I'm sorry. Please don't cry. Now, come along. Let's go inside.
And so I came into this house in tears. It was wrong. It was all wrong. Maybe the house saw me crying, or this room. I got so unreasonably angry with John. I shouldn't, I know. He's so careful and loving, and I repay him so badly. I should control myself, at least in front of him. But it makes me so tired not to show what I feel. Jenny met us at the door. Naturally, she saw I'd been crying, but she took pains to ignore it.
Well, hello, you two. You're early. You must have started at the crack of dawn. How was the trip?
Made it in less than 2 hours.
They're like as peas in a pod, Jenny and John, both efficient and kind.
And how did you bear up, Pet?
Oh, very well, thank you, Jenny. Both kind and both somehow cruel, but I don't really think that.
Well, you're just in time for lunch. I bought a flounder down at the wharf and cooked it with capers and cream. Sound good?
Wonderful, Jenny.
May I see the house first?
The whole grand tour? Oh, Pet, the flounder will cook to death.
Well, at least my room.
Our room.
All right, if you insist. But if that fish is spoiled, don't blame me.
Why would I blame her?
Whose room is this, Jenny? Yours?
Uh-huh, it's small, but it's near the door and the telephone.
Oh, John, what? Look.
What?
Let's take this one for you and me. I love those roses over the window.
I've already put your things upstairs, Pet.
Well, this has a little porch and such pretty old-fashioned chintz hangings.
Well, you'll love the room upstairs, darling.
And you can see there's no room in here for two beds.
And I won't hear of being in separate rooms. I'm going to make you rest and take your tonic.
John and I have talked it all over. And the room at the top of the house has so many windows.
And you know, darling, you must absorb lots of fresh air. Get your appetite back.
They smother me with concern. They crush me with kindness.
Come along. There's a good girl.
All right, you know what's best.
And you're going to like that nursery. It gets loads of sunshine.
Up the steep, narrow stairs, two stories up to the very top of the house. There's a gate at the top that locks. I wonder why. And beyond the gate is the nursery room, this room. It is big and airy, nearly a whole floor with windows that look every way. They say it was a nursery, but what was it really?
Open them all, Jenny. Wide.
All right.
Well, darling?
Why are the windows barred?
For the little children. Otherwise, it wouldn't be safe.
Oh, yeah. I suppose. Children climb around so, don't they? What are those rings and things in the walls?
Oh, I expect they made it into a gymnasium when the children got older.
A sort of playground.
Oh, they must have hated the wallpaper.
Well, they were rough on it, that's for sure.
The way they've stripped it off in patches. I don't blame them. It's hideous.
Oh, who wants to look at the wallpaper with this view? My, you can see the whole bay.
It's a revolting color. It's unclean. Such a strange, sickish yellow there where the sun's faded it. I never saw worse paper in my life.
Don't dramatize it, darling. You must be hungry, and I know you're tired.
I'm not tired. Why do you both act this way? I say the wallpaper's ugly, and you look at each other. Your eyes shuttle back and forth, and suddenly you both act as though I'd lost my...
Darling, that was something we weren't going to say.
Be a good girl, Pet. We don't act anyway. We just don't want you to worry. We want you to be well.
It's true, that's all they want. John laughs at me, of course, but one expects that in marriage. And he says I have foolish fancies and he sometimes can talk them away, but not this time. No matter what he says, it's a smoldering, sulfurous, unclean, it's hideous wallpaper. No wonder the children scratched at it and stripped it down. No wonder they gouge the plaster with their little fingernails. No wonder they hate it. I hate it myself. And somehow, I feel it hates me. We've been here 2 weeks, and I haven't felt like riding again since that first day. I'm sitting by the window now, up in this frightful nursery room. There's nothing to stop my riding as much as I please. John is away all day, and sometimes even at night if he has a serious case. I'm glad my case is not serious. But these nervous troubles can be depressing all the same. I cry at nothing and cry most of the time. John doesn't know how much I suffer. He knows there's no reason to suffer, and that satisfies him. I suppose John was never nervous in his life. He laughs at me so about this wallpaper.
No, I won't let you have your way, you silly goose. If we'd taken the room downstairs, you'd be seeing faces in the chintz drapes.
Not faces. Look at that spot, John. And that one over there.
Yes, I see. It's a repeating pattern.
It's a broken neck with two bulging eyes staring at me upside down.
And to me, it's a climbing ivy or some kind of a vine. Take your choice. Could be anything. Besides, I can't repaper a room just for a 3 months' rental.
Well, then let's move downstairs. Take me away from it. Don't you see, John? It hates me. I wish I'd get well faster.
Just use your will and your good sense, darling.
I'm afraid.
But you're so much better.
When I married you, I meant to be such a help, and I'm only a burden.
You are a help to me. You're my comfort.
I can't even be with my baby. It makes me so nervous. Will I ever be well enough to see him again?
Of course you'll be well, if you try.
Then I'll try, I promise.
From now on, I won't look at the wallpaper, and I'll stop seeing things out of the windows.
Out the windows?
I see people walking up and down the paths and in the arbors. I know it's silly, and it's only in certain lights when I look at the wallpaper from the bed that I see...
See what?
Nothing. Nothing. No, you're right. There's nothing except a pattern.
A front pattern and an under pattern in a different shade of yellow. It dwells in my mind so. I lie on that great immovable bed. It's nailed down, I believe, and follow that pattern about by the hour. And then where it isn't faded, and when the sun is just so, I see a strange, faint, formless sort of figure lurking, waiting behind that front design. I don't know why I should write like this day after day. I don't want to. I don't feel able. And I know John would think it absurd, but I must express what I feel and think in some way. It's such a relief. There are things in that wallpaper that nobody knows about but me. You know, there's a woman stooping down and creeping about behind that pattern. Last night it was moonlight, and the moon shines in all around just as the sun does. John was asleep, and I hated to waken him, so I kept still and watched the moonlight on the wall till I felt creepy. The woman behind the paper began to shake the pattern as if she wanted to get out. I got up softly and went and felt the paper to see if it did move. It moved! It moved, I'm sure of it. And the poor woman cried out as though her voice came a long way over water. Thing. Then I went back to the bed. John was awake.
What is it, darling? Why are you up? Well, you shouldn't go walking around like that. You'll catch cold.
The moonlight woke me.
You are cold. You're shivering.
John, I'm not really getting better. Won't you take me away?
Lise will be up in 3 weeks, darling. I don't see how we can leave before then. Of course, if you were in any danger, I would, but... You really are better, dear, whether you see it or not. I'm a doctor, and I know.
Oh, my appetite may be better in the evening when you're here, but it's worse in the morning when you're gone.
Why, you're gaining flesh and color.
I don't weigh a bit more, not even as much.
Well, bless your little heart. You shall be as sick as you please. But let's go to sleep, huh? And talk about it in the morning.
You won't go away?
How can I, dear? And why should I, since you're better?
Better in body, perhaps, but
darling,
in my health.
For my sake and your sake and for the sake of our child, I beg you not to let that idea enter your head. Not for an instant. Can't you trust me as a doctor when I tell you it's a false and foolish idea? Answer me, darling. Don't you trust me?
Yes, of course I trust you, only...
What?
I'm sleepy. Let's go to sleep.
But I didn't sleep. I lay there for hours trying to decide if the front pattern and the back pattern moved together or separately. At night, in the moonlight, the front pattern becomes bars. And the woman behind it shakes the bars. Yes, she shakes the bars as she creeps around. I lie down ever so much now. John says it's good for me and to sleep all I can. But you see, I don't sleep. And that cultivates deceit, for I don't tell him I'm awake. Oh, no. Fact is, I'm getting a little afraid of John. He seems very odd sometimes, and it strikes me that perhaps it's the yellow wallpaper. I like this room now. And life is much more exciting than it used to be. I have something more to expect, to look forward to. To watch. And I really do eat better, and I'm quieter than I was. John is pleased to see me improve.
You see? You're flourishing like a weed in spite of your wallpaper.
Yes. In spite of the wallpaper. in spite of it, because of it. But I had no intention of telling him that. He might want to take me away, and I don't want to leave now until I found out. There's 1 week more, and I think that will be enough. There's a funny mark on the wall low down near the mop board. A streak that runs around the room, goes behind every piece of furniture except the bed. A long, straight, even smudge, as if it had been rubbed over and over and over. How was it done? Who did it? What did they do? Round and round. Round and round. Round. It makes me dizzy. I've really discovered something at last. There are a great many women behind the pattern, and sometimes only one, and she creeps around fast, and her creeping shakes the pattern. She's trying to climb through and can't because the pattern strangles everything. But she does get out in the daytime, I know because I've seen her. When a car comes, she hides in the blackberry vines. I don't blame her. I'd hide, too. I always lock the door when I creep by daylight. There are only 2 days left to tear this paper off and let the woman out in the room. And John's beginning to take notice. I don't like the look in his eyes or the way he talks with Jenny about me. I overheard them.
She isn't sleeping nights, Jenny. She's quiet, but I know she's awake.
Well, it's little wonder she sleeps the whole blessed day.
Yeah. Maybe I ought to call in another doctor.
No, it's just stubbornness, John. She's determined to prove you're wrong.
I suppose you're right. Oh, I'm sure she'll improve. Oh, darling.
Well, hello, pet. How you creep about?
Well, that's a funny thing to say, Jenny. It isn't I who creeps.
Jenny says you stay in your room too much. You don't take your exercise.
You tell me to rest and then you tell me to take exercise. I can't do both.
Well,
as though I can't see through them.
Tomorrow's our last day here. We'll talk about exercise when I get you back to town.
I'll have to rouse you out of bed pretty early, pet. You know, some of that furniture up there belongs downstairs, and the movers will be here at 9.
Maybe you'll sleep upstairs tonight, Jenny. So you won't be alone, darling.
You won't be here tonight, John?
Well, not until tomorrow evening. There's a difficult case.
If you're going to feel lonesome...
Oh, no, Jenny. I'll rest better alone, I'm sure of it. Thank you all the same. That was clever of me. The sly thing. I won't be alone a bit. As soon as the moon shone in, the poor thing behind the paper began to crawl and shake the pattern. I ran to her. I pulled, and she shook. I shook, and she pulled. And by morning, we'd peeled off yards and yards of yellow wallpaper, a strip about as high as my head and half around the room. When Jenny came up in the morning, she looked at the wall in amazement. You know why I did it, Jenny? Just to spite the vicious thing. Why are you so surprised?
Oh, I'm not. Why, I wouldn't mind doing it myself. But you mustn't tire yourself, Pet.
She wouldn't mind doing it.
Why don't you come downstairs and lie down?
How she betrayed herself, that Jenny. She wouldn't mind doing it. But I'm here and no person touches this paper but me. Not alive. I've locked the door and thrown the key down into the front path. I don't want anybody to come in till John comes. I want to surprise him. And I've got a rope up here. Even Jenny doesn't know that. If the woman gets out from behind the pattern and tries to run away, I can tie her securely to one of the rings in the wall. There, see how the pattern moves, like wallowing seaweeds. Oh, it'll strangle her unless I help. Wait, I'll help you. I'll peel off the paper all I can. Wait, be patient. You push. You push and I'll pull. Oh, it sticks horribly to the plaster. There, I can get it off with my teeth. Oh, it hurts. But I'm getting it. Wait, just a
wonder if they all came out of the wallpaper as I did. I think they did. But I have you securely tied by my rope now. You'll never get away. But I don't want to get away. It's so pleasant to be out in this great room to creep about as I please. It's so pleasant. But I suppose I'll have to get back behind the pattern when night comes. That will be hard to do. Well, it's better than going outside. I won't go outside, even if Jenny asks me to. For outside, I have to creep on the ground where everything is green instead of yellow. And here, I can creep smoothly on the floor. Listen. Listen, she's coming now.
Darling, open the door. Do you hear me? Open the door.
Oh, it's John at the door.
Open the door, darling. Open it, please, dear.
How he does pound and shout. It's no use, Dr. John. You can't open it.
Open it, do you hear me, dear? Open it! Jenny, bring me the axe.
Oh, no, he'll break down that beautiful door. John, dear, the key's down in front of the house under a plantain leaf.
Please, my darling,
it's
please.
It's down by the front door, John.
Open the door, for heaven's sake, open it.
I can't. The key's downstairs, John. It's under a plantain leaf by the front steps. It's under a plantain leaf, John. Go and see. Go and see. You'll find it if you look. You'll find it. There. He's gone to look. The wallpaper has stopped laughing. The evil thing. Now I can creep slowly, smoothly on the floor. Round and round. Round and round and round. My shoulder just fits into that long smudge on the wall, so I can't lose my way. Oh, he's coming back. He's running on the stairs. How astonished he'll be.
Darling! Oh, my dear, what is this? What's happened?
I've got out at last, John.
Out?
Yes, out in spite of you and Jenny. I pulled down the paper. I shook the pattern and pushed and pulled it down. It stuck horribly. But he'll never put me back. He'll never put me back. You're so pale, John. Why do you close your eyes? You watch. Watch how swiftly I creep around in this lovely yellow room. Fainted? Now, why should that man have fainted? But he did. And right across my path by the wall, so that I have to creep over him every time. Round and round and round and round.
Thank you, Agnes Moorhead, for a magnificent performance. And now here again is Miss Agnes Moorhead.
It's always a great pleasure for me to appear on Suspense. I've thoroughly enjoyed this appearance this evening. And next week, when I turn listener again, I'll join the rest of you to welcome Mr. Charles Lawton's return to these microphones in a role written especially for him. Next week, then, An Honest Man, starring Charles Lawton on...
Suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from July 28, 1948 on CBS. It's an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now turning over hosting duties to Paul McGrath, who is our scary storyteller for The Inner Sanctum. This episode from CBS, heard on December 18th, 1945, called The Undead.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you through the squeaking door for another half hour of lovely chills and shudders. Oh, before we begin tonight, I'd like to give you a word of advice. If you should ever walk through a cemetery at midnight and come face to face with a transparent personality floating above a tombstone, don't be frightened. After all, you can see right through him.
Good gracious, why do we have to talk about cemeteries?
Because, Mary, our story tonight is about a vampire. Where else would you expect to find one if not in a cemetery? In the Vampire State Building? Hmm?
Well, suppose you go wait in that closet there and talk to the skeleton while I have a word with our Lipton listeners about one secret of success. You know, folks, when a Hollywood actress climbs up to stardom, it's usually because there's something different about her personality. And that's true of other success stories. Lipton Tea, for example, is the largest selling brand of tea in the world.
Fine, Mary, but quietly, my dear.
Why the whisper, mister?
Don't make too much noise or you'll wake the dead. And we don't want to do that because tonight's story is called The Undead. It's an original radio play by Milton Lewis. Yes, and our star tonight is Anne Seymour, who plays the role of Diana.
I was alone, here in the penthouse, sleeping. The doors leading to the terrace were open. Suddenly, I was awakened by a queer, whirring noise that sounded like the flapping of wings. I opened my eyes. Moonlight filled the room. It was one of those clear, cloudless nights that the winds moaned and howled like weeping women. Somewhere, a dog howled. I sat up, peered into the green light of the moon. Could see nothing at first. I lay down again. My eyes were half closed. And I heard it again. The sound of wings beating on the air. I told myself it was nothing. Until out of the queer green shadows that surrounded me like a mist, I saw a pair of blood-red eyes close to my face. No. They weren't human eyes. They were rimmed with green. And they glittered like glass in the dark. I looked closer. Too frightened to move. Too terrified to cry out. The thing that seemed to be flying round my head looked like a bat. Said it wasn't a bat. Suddenly it floated down. I felt soft fur on my neck. And my throat was pierced with a sharp, terrible pain. I started screaming, "Let me go! Let me go! Richard! Where are you, Richard?
Go on, Diana.
When I felt your arms around me, I knew I was safe, Richard, but it was the most horrible dream I ever had.
Yes, I know, darling. You were hysterical.
What do you think it meant?
Well, nothing. Nothing, of course, dear. Everyone has nightmares like that sometime or other.
But it was so vivid. I could almost swear it happened just as I told it to you.
Now, Diana, do you really believe you've encountered a vampire?
I know it. Sounds ridiculous, darling.
Listen, baby, you're living in New York City on top of an 18-story building. This is 1945, not the Middle Ages. Well, the whole notion is just rubbish.
I tried to tell myself it was nonsense, too. But somehow... Oh, Richard, I want to get out of this place.
But why?
I don't like this apartment. There's something evil, sinister here. I've always felt it. And listen. Listen to that wind. The wind howl around here all the time.
Well, naturally, it's a penthouse, and it catches the winds from the river.
Do you hear that? Something flapping on the terrace.
That's just the awning. Dear.
There are always queer noises around here, all the time, and I can't bear it being alone here at night. Richard, please, please don't let me stay here alone tonight.
I can't stay with you, darling. I've got to go to the
theater. I don't want you to go there, please. Let your understudy take the part tonight. Take me away from here, far away where it's warm and there's sunlight.
Diana, you don't know what you're saying, dear. I can't give up my part in the show.
Of course. course. Oh, darling, forgive me, please. I'm sorry I ever mentioned it. You do forgive me, don't you, Richard? Say you do.
Why, of course. You're just upset over the silly dream.
I know. I won't mention it again.
You're okay, baby. Well, it's 7:50. I'd better get going. Want to come with me?
Yes. No. No, I'm going to stay here.
But if this place frightens you...
That's just why I'm going to stay. And alone. I'm going to beat this thing. Somehow.
That's better, darling. Much better.
Here's your coat. Right. And you'd better take your scarf. It feels chilly. Richard.
Hmm?
I said I won't mention it again, but there's one thing more I have to tell you. That the face of that thing in my dream, it was your face.
Diana, in the name of heaven.
I won't talk of it anymore. I promise you, darling. I didn't mean to upset you just before you went to the theater. Just kiss me, dear. I'll be all right.
Diana.
Good night, dear. I'll be waiting when you get back. It was just midnight, 2 nights later. I was waiting for Richard to come home from the theater. I was going through his desk looking for a postage stamp, and I found something that turned my blood to ice. It was a newspaper clipping, dated 10 years ago. The picture of a man, and under it the caption, "Prominent real estate operator Richard Barker, found dead of a sudden stroke." I looked at the picture again. There could be no doubt of it. It was Richard. I read further. The deceased will be buried at Woodlawn, Greenlawn Cemetery, after services in the Westland Funeral Chapel.
Good evening, Diana.
Richard.
Why, what's the matter? You seem startled.
I didn't hear you come in.
Have you been brooding again?
No, Richard. Of course not.
Well, how do you feel tonight?
Not very well.
Weak?
Weak, sleepy, ill.
Well, no wonder. You've hardly been eating a thing. And I know that you never catch a wink of sleep.
I told you I can't sleep in the daytime as you do. As you do.
Why are you staring at me like that?
Why? Why do you sleep in the daytime?
Well, I've been doing it for years.
Years?
What's so terrible about that? Most theatrical people do. We live and work at night.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Really, Diana, what is the matter with you?
Nothing. You think I'm losing my mind?
Well, I don't know what to think.
Why are you pretending?
Pretending what?
That you're something other than what you are. Because I know what you are, Richard.
Really?
I found out. This clipping I found in your desk, it tells how you died.
That clipping? Oh, that.
Why are you laughing?
Well, you see, it's a joke. It's a gag. One of my pictures was sent to the papers, publicity for a new play, you know. And a drunken typester put it in the obituary column. It's quite an amusing story.
I don't believe you. You're lying.
Listen, you can't go on like
no,
this.
No, don't touch me.
You're not well, darling.
Get your hands away from me.
But I just want to kiss
no,
you.
No, don't touch me.
Diana, where are you going?
Out of here.
Diana, come back.
I'll come back when I've proved something to myself.
What, ma'am?
I'm sorry to wake you up. Are you the caretaker here at Greenlawn?
Many years, ma'am.
I want to see the grave of Richard Barker.
Who are you?
Diana Barker. His wife.
But it's 1 a.m, Mrs. Barker.
I know what time it is. I want to see the grave.
No one comes at a time like this.
Please, will you tell me? Perhaps this will help.
$10.
For disturbing you.
All right. You take the path in back of my house. Turn to the right. Have you a flashlight?
I brought one from the car.
It's only a short way, but it isn't a grave, ma'am. It's sort of a tomb.
Thank you. I'll find it.
You want me to come with you?
No, I've troubled you enough. Good night.
Good night.
Somewhere, an owl was howling, as though warning me not to go on with this insane adventure. But I knew I had to continue. I had to be certain. I followed his directions along the path of the cemetery. The moon poked yellow fingers through scudding clouds as though showing me the way. I was frightened, terrified. There's nothing to fear from the dead. I kept telling myself that to keep up my courage. The dead. Perhaps they were right. There was nothing to fear from them. But the undead. There it was. A tomb. The inscription was clear. Here lies Richard Barker. Born May 7th, 1890. Died September 4th, 1935. There was a lock on the door. It was old and rusty. I'd come this far. I made up my mind. I picked up a stone. Smashed the lock. I opened the door. Blackness. Inky blackness, such as one imagines one would see at the end of the world. Turned on the flashlight I took from the car. Coffin was lying in the center of the tomb, on an altar. I felt my heart beating wildly, like a throbbing drum inside me. With a trembling hand, I opened the coffin. I looked down on a ghastly white satin lining. That was all there was in the coffin. There was nothing else. It was empty. I looked up. There was a face staring at me in the shadows of the tomb. It was Richard.
Diana, I knew you'd come here.
Friends, that just goes to show that an empty coffin makes the most noise. And now let's go back to our horrors. Diana has just discovered that her husband was wandering around his tomb. What would you do in a situation like that? Here's what Diana did. Listen.
I ran blindly, stumbling, tearing my clothes. Somehow I managed to reach the car, start the motor. In the car, I knew it wasn't all some dream. People didn't come back from the dead. Did they? Could they? I drove to the city. I wanted to see the lights, people, hear music. I wanted to be sure this was the world I'd always known. I tried to think. I tried to reason. I tried to understand what had happened to me. Because I knew something was happening to me. Something that I dreaded. I was becoming like them. Like Richard. I felt strange cravings. Desires that I didn't dare think of.
Excuse me, Mrs. Barker.
Oh.
May I sit with you?
I don't believe I know you.
But perhaps not. Does it make any difference?
No. No, it doesn't. Please, sit down.
Thank you.
I'm glad you came over. I'm glad to be able to talk to anyone tonight.
I've been watching you for the last 10 minutes.
Have you?
You look very strange tonight.
How do you know me?
We all know each other.
We?
Yes. You realize you'll be dead soon.
Dead?
At least, what they call dead.
You know what's happened?
Oh, yes, of course. I've seen it happening for weeks. Your face became paler and paler. It will not be long now. You will become one of us.
I don't want to.
It's not in your hands.
It isn't true. It can't be true.
It's quite true. Many of us have gone on for hundreds of years. Those who sustain us become like us.
And I...
There is no escape.
No, I don't believe it.
Don't you feel it? Blood. That strange desire.
Yes.
There. You see?
I don't want to.
I once tried to fight him, too. It's no use.
I'm going away. Far away, where he can't reach me. I'm going now where no one can reach me.
Waiter! Will you help me here? There's been an accident.
Everything is going to be all right, Diana. Just lie here and rest quietly. You're in your own home.
I opened my eyes and saw Claudia, my older sister. Never was so glad to see anyone in all my life. Claudia had always helped me, always advised me. She'd know what to do.
You want something to eat?
No, I'm not hungry.
But the doctor said you'd have to eat.
How did I get here?
You collapsed in the cocktail lounge. They brought you home.
When?
Last night.
It's dark out.
You've been sleeping almost 24 hours.
Where's Richard?
At the theater. Poor boy, he was so worried about you.
Was he?
He sent for me. I've been with you since last night. Diana, what happened?
It's terribly difficult to explain. I sometimes think I'm losing my mind. I'd be sure that's what it is if I hadn't found out differently.
Tell me about it.
I found out Richard is dead. He's been dead for 10 years.
What are you talking about?
It's true, Claudia. I went to Greenlawn. I saw his tomb. I opened it and the coffin was empty.
Diana!
I know what you're thinking, but I'm not insane. He never sleeps at night. Now I feel this strange craving. Claudia, don't stare at me.
You know what you're saying.
Yes, I know it sounds wild, fantastic, but I haven't told this to anyone, but it's true. There are things in this world you only think are primitive superstitions, but Claudia, you must believe me.
Yes, of course, I believe you, dear.
We must destroy Richard. I've read about those things. We must destroy him by driving a wooden stake through his heart. That's the only way I can escape from him. That's the only way I can become a human being again.
Diana.
You'll help me, Claudia.
Of course, dear. Haven't I always helped you?
Where are you going?
Just to fix you something to eat.
No. No, you're going to leave me. Leave me here alone with him. I won't let you do that, Claudia.
That gun. Where did you get that gun?
We've always had one here. Ever since I first told Richard I was afraid of this place. You're not going to leave me alone now, Claudia. I'm not going to let you.
Of course not.
Get away from that door.
If that's what you
Claudia,
want.
Claudia, come back. No. No, you're insane. No.
Gone.
Insane. She was so sure I was insane, she didn't even give me a chance to explain. I was alone in the house. I felt terribly weak. I wanted to sleep. I wanted to sleep forever and ever. But I knew if I lay down and closed my eyes, I might never open them again. Never open them and see the world as you or I used to. I'd be something else. I looked at the clock. Almost midnight. Richard would be coming back any minute. I ran to the door, locked it from the inside with the safety bolt. What to do? What to do? Please, I ran to the telephone. Hello, operator. Get me the police and hurry, please.
One moment, please.
Hurry, will you? This is a matter of life and death. Hello, are you ringing them?
Police department. Sergeant Kilway talking.
Hello, police. You've got to help me.
Yes, what is it, please?
My husband, he's going to do something to me tonight. He's going to make me what he is.
What's that, lady?
He's been dead for 10 years. I saw his empty coffin. That's proof, isn't it? That's evidence. You always want evidence, and there it is. Now, do you understand?
Well, I'm not sure I do, lady. What's your name?
Diana Barker.
But all right. Now, calm down. Tell me where you live.
I live... Oh, you think I'm insane, too, don't you?
I didn't say that.
You think I'm crazy, just as Claudia does.
If you'll just give me the address, lady.
Oh, what's the use?
Please, lady.
No one believes it. I know I'm not insane. I knew it, and yet... What's that? His key in the lock. He can't open it. It's bolted from the inside. He's trying to get in. But he can't. Not with that bolt. I won't open it. I won't. I'll just pretend I don't hear it. I'll cover my ears with my hands and I won't hear it. He can't get in here. If I can keep him out until daylight, I'll be safe. Safe. Suddenly, the doorbell stopped. I knew he hadn't gone away. I could feel him near me. But he couldn't get in. No, he couldn't get into the penthouse. There was no way to get in unless he came through the terrace. And there was no way to get on the terrace unless he could fly. Fly. The wind was screaming. When I turned to look at the French doors leading to the terrace, it was impossible. He couldn't. And yet, he couldn't. And yet, the doors burst open. The wind blew through the house like a cyclone. The airframe and the double doors.
didn't you let me in?
How did you get out of the church?
Never mind. What are you doing with that gun?
Don't come near me, Richard.
Diana?
Go away. Go away and leave me alone.
Give me that gun.
No.
I'm warning you, Diana. You'd better give it to me.
If you take another step toward me, I'll fire.
Diana? You see?
The bullets. They didn't harm you.
No.
But I didn't miss.
No.
It's empty.
You see? It didn't do any good.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to put an end to this once and for all, Diana.
An end?
I've prepared for this. I have a knife, you see.
Richard.
Don't be afraid, Diana. You won't quite die.
No, no, don't.
Come here, Diana.
No, Richard, no.
You're
no.
making too much trouble while you're alive.
No. Help me, someone. Let go of me. No. I saw the knife over my throat. I beat at his chest with the empty pistol. Then, just before everything became black, I saw three flashes of lightning.
Go on, Mrs. Barker.
When I woke up in the hospital, Inspector, I couldn't believe that I was still alive. It seemed like a miracle.
You would have been dead if it wasn't for your sister.
Claudia.
She came back with one of our men. He shot and killed your husband just as he was about to plunge the dagger into you.
But how did he get in?
He came over the adjoining terrace from the penthouse next door, just as your husband did. No, Mrs. Barker, your husband didn't fly.
But the other things, the picture, the tomb, the empty coffin.
All props for an elaborate scheme your husband worked out to murder you. Richard Barker is not an uncommon name. He found a man with that name who died 10 years ago. He removed the body. He got the whole idea from the dream you told him.
But why?
To establish that you were insane. Oh. He planned to murder you and claim he did it in self-defense to protect himself against an insane woman.
But the gun...
Filled with blanks. He wanted to get your money, Mrs. Barker.
But the way I felt, those strange cravings...
You're suffering from anemia. Your doctor told us that. It's not uncommon for anemia sufferers to feel the way you did.
I still can't believe it. I still feel... But he isn't quite dead.
I'll relieve that fear right now. His body's in the other room. I think you should see it. Come this way, Mrs. Barker. There. Raise the lid of the coffin, Charlie.
Yes, Inspector.
What's the matter?
He looks so lifelike. His lips are so ready. He looks as though he could move. Get up at any minute.
Nonsense. I assure you he's quite dead, Mrs. Barker. And I can further assure you that the police department has never encountered one authentic vampire in its history.
You're very reassuring, Inspector. I think I'd better leave now. Don't bother to see me to the door. Bye.
All right, Charlie. Cover him up and have him buried.
Okay, Inspector.
What is it, Charlie?
Inspector, maybe I'm nuts, but I could swear that I saw him move.
Oh, nonsense. Close the lid. It's getting dark, Charlie. Sun sure goes down quick these winter days. I'm going home. Good night, Charlie. Richard is really dead. That's something for you to sleep on when you go to bed tonight. Oh, and by the way, we have a moral for tonight's story. Yes, it's taken from the diary of Miss Delirium Tremens, who once said, "Never marry a vampire. He may turn out to be 500 years old without a social security number to his name. How can a girl have any fun going around with a guy like that?"
Well, Mr. Host, I don't think that's a serious problem. I'm positive that no girl will ever meet a vampire, much less marry one.
Ah, but you can't be sure, Mary. The safest thing is to drive a wooden stake through your husband's heart. Yes, if he dies, then he must be a vampire.
Oh, such foolishness. Let's forget all this talk about vampires, because I want to tell the folks about something wonderful that's going to happen next week. And next Tuesday's Christmas, you know. So instead of our usual mystery thriller, Inner Sanctum will bring you a tender and beautiful Christmas play called The Littlest Angel. And our star will be that great and beloved actress, Helen Hayes. There's a lovely musical score, specially written for the littlest angel. So be sure to tune into this station at the regular Inner Sanctum time next week. I promise you, The Littlest Angel, starring Helen Hayes, and brought to you by the makers of Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup, will be the crowning pleasure of your Christmas day.
That sounds great, Mary. You know, Christmas is really wonderful. There's something about it that gets even the most hardened characters. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is The Fearful Passage by H.C. Branson. And don't forget what Mary told you, friends. Next week, we'll bring you Inner Sanctum's special Christmas program, directed by Hyman Brown and starring Helen Hayes, America's first lady of the theater. There'll be no gore, no chill. Not even one little murder, believe it or not. The holiday spirit is getting even worse. So be sure to join us next Tuesday. Meanwhile, I'm going to do my Christmas shopping. You know where I can get a nice fur-lined coffin for a cold-blooded friend? Until next Tuesday, then. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 18th, 1945 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.